From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Reginald Hardwick, and for Brian Mackey, thank you for joining us on this first day of August. In recent months, with President Donald Trump's changes to tariff policy, we've heard about instability and uncertainty in the market. But the same is true on Main Street. Over 36 million people are living in poverty, according to the last census report, and income inequality has continued to rise for most of the last 60 years, as the Urban Institute notes.
The president's tariffs, which have upended global trade agreements and sent corporations scrambling, have introduced a ton of uncertainty into the economic outlook.
Despite uncertainty about the direction of the overall economy and what you're seeing on your screen,
the 10-year Treasury has really been pretty range-bound over the past couple of months. Despite all the tariff uncertainty, concerns that maybe the economy is slowing more than expected.
Retailers and consumers are navigating a volatile landscape with slowing economic growth, sticky inflation, and ongoing trade tensions testing their resilience. All right, we got a lot to dig in here. I want to start with those tariffs, still a main concern and source of uncertainty.
And the economy is making headlines this morning. The Labor Department reported that U.S. employers added just 73,000 jobs last month, well short of the 115,000 forecasters had expected. And revisions shaved more than a quarter million jobs off of previously reported May and June payrolls. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump signed an executive order last night that set new tariffs on more than 60 U.S. trading partners, including 35% on Canada and 20% on Taiwan. They go into effect a week from today. As we speak at 11:07, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down almost 1%, down 415 points, and the NASDAQ is down 339, about a little over 1%. To talk more about the state of our economy and how people are feeling, I'm joined by Joanne Hsu, Director of the Surveys of Consumers and a Research Associate Professor at the University of Michigan, as well as Dean Baker, Senior Economist and co-founder of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And welcome to you, Joanne and Dean.
Thanks for having me on.
And this conversation isn't complete with all of you listening. Are you spending less money right now? Are you having a hard time making ends meet? And is this uncertainty impacting your mental health? Join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. And I want to start with a text from Joe in Champaign. He says, as a retiree, I am nervous about my future financial prospects. The turbulence in this vengeful system leaves me befuddled. We are losing our closest allies and trade partners, and our trade partners are seeking other markets. This is not winning, and America cannot sustain the island we create. Dean, let's start with you. What are your first thoughts about hearing about the new tariffs announced by President Trump?
Well, this is kind of theater of the absurd. Someone made an analogy which I think really fits. This is like you have an 8-year-old kid on the soccer field, and he keeps hitting the ball into his own goal. And each time he does that, he just gives a big celebration and runs around on the field, and then he does it again. And I hope someone will tell him, no, you want to get into the other goal. And that's kind of what we're seeing here. I mean, Trump is celebrating high tariffs. These are taxes on us. I've never seen a president in my lifetime celebrate tax increases. We've had tax increases. Usually they apologize for it, but he's celebrating it. And the other part of the story, of course, is he's created this trade war when there's no reason for it. I mean, he's going on about these countries are treating us unfairly. It's nonsense. It's, you know, we're trading with them. We gain, they gain. That's kind of the story. I mean, you could have stories where certain sectors of the country are hurt by trade, you know, true of our manufacturing workers at the start of this century. But in general, trade benefits both parties. So I can't say this is a good story, what we're seeing with Trump and his tariffs.
And in your recent piece with the Center for Economic and Policy Research, you say the economy is not booming. Why is that?
Well, we had the economy actually shrank in the first quarter. We fell at 0.5% annual rate. And I mean, that's not secret. You know, it's government data, a big report when it comes out. And people, including myself, we dismissed that because we said it's a weird quarter. We had all these imports. I mean, again, it's all very clear in the data. Then we got a good report. I mean, if taken in isolation, the second quarter, but then you average the two, it's just over 1%. And this compares to almost a 3% growth rate in 2024. So the economy slowed by quite a bit. And then looking at it more closely, you go, okay, well, what's going on with wages, which is, of course, most people's income? Real wage growth has slowed. It actually fell in June. It was just a tenth of a percent. I won't make a big point of 1 month, 0.1%, but that is the wrong direction. So this is not a good story. Again, you don't want to make too much of a short period's data, but it doesn't look like things are going in the right direction.
Joanne with the University of Michigan, I'm curious how you're reacting to news of the stock market. You can talk about today or also in recent weeks.
Well, when we look at the consumer data, we're really looking at how consumers feel about the future of the economy. It's a forward-looking measure, and it really is it's an important one because consumer spending generates most of the economy or most of GDP, and how people feel about the economy going forward really influences that behavior. And really, I would say that consumers are broadly in agreement over the course of 2025 that the outlook for the future has soured. And so I don't think they are going to be taking as much surprise. The recent data that's come in, you know, this morning with the weak jobs report and the downward revisions to the last few months, that's not going to come as a surprise to consumers. Looking forward, we have about 60% of consumers who believe unemployment rates are going to rise in the year ahead. And that's up from, you know, only 35% a year ago. So consumers are broadly in agreement that despite strong stock markets, valuations, that the outlook of the economy has deteriorated.
I know last year around this time, we're in the throngs of the presidential race, and you know, people kept talking about the economy, the price of eggs and such. But I don't feel like that, you know, with all of what you two are saying, you know, people are still pounding the economy, or maybe it's just maybe the political folks who aren't talking about it as much. I mean, how do you think consumers are feeling about the economy?
Consumers' views of the economy are very much being shaped by developments with trade policy. About a year ago, consumers were expressing a lot of uncertainty, but at that time, it was kind of uncertainty over one state of the world under a Democratic president and a possible second state of the world under a Republican president. But that level of uncertainty, of course, has been resolved. We know who the president is and has been for the last 7 months. The consumers are expressing a lot of concern that tariff policy is extremely volatile. It's uncertain. You know, some consumers are very concerned that tariff rates are extremely high. But overall, consumers are broadly aware and in agreement that the volatility and uncertainty of tariff policy makes it very difficult for businesses to plan, and it makes it very difficult for consumers to plan as well. So unless that volatility and uncertainty resolves, it's hard to see consumers regaining the confidence that they may have had before.
We're talking about the state of our economy and how people are feeling. We're joined by Joanne Hsu, Director of the Surveys of Consumers and Research Associate Professor at the University of Michigan, as well as Dean Baker, Senior Economist and Co-Founder of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And you can join us. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. Dean, we don't want to go all doomsday here, but is there any talk of recession in the near future? I know that's a dangerous word.
Well, you know, people focus, to my mind, too much on a recession. I mean, you know, recessions are bad. I think that's fair enough. But I think what we're looking at most immediately is slower growth. Now, that doesn't rule out the possibility of a recession. But if we look to our last two recessions, those were caused last three, I guess. We had the COVID recession. I was going to skip that. But the 2008-2009 recession, we had a huge housing bubble. It collapsed. That gave us the recession. So a very clear event. The 2001 recession, that was a stock bubble. The internet-led stock bubble, that collapsed, gave us a recession. Prior recessions, the Fed, in a certain sense, I use this hesitantly, they brought it on by raising interest rates too much. So they were trying to slow inflation. They raised interest rates too much. It gave us a recession. So that's true in 1991. I don't want to go back to ancient history, but I can keep going like that. I don't see those events on the horizon. What I see is that the tariffs are reducing purchasing power. Things are becoming more expensive. That means people could buy less after you adjust for the prices. And then on top of that, it creates uncertainty. So investment is weak. It hasn't fallen, but it is weak. So I expect that to mean a slowing economy. It doesn't have to lead to a recession, but it certainly can. And I'll also mention, you were talking about the stock market a moment ago. Yeah, it's real high. Real high stock markets are ones that are vulnerable to collapsing. A low stock market doesn't collapse. And I'm not being cryptic here. If you go back to the internet bubble in the late 90s, well, that set up a situation where it collapsed. We're looking at comparable valuations today where the AI sector is clearly leading. Is that a bubble? To be honest, I haven't looked closely enough to make that sort of judgment. I'll just say the numbers are there where it could be.
And I know here in Illinois, you know, we're watching the tariffs, particularly on Canada, at 35%. I mean, what is the concern there, that, you know, what the tariffs could have on the broader economy?
Well, we have a thoroughly integrated economy with Canada. And again, this is one of the things that's just kind of painful to hear Trump talk about, like they're cheating us. And it's, you know, I'm actually from Illinois. So, you know, Illinois trades with Wisconsin and Ohio. And frankly, I have no idea who has a surplus between Illinois and Ohio. And it doesn't matter. And that's kind of the story with Canada. We very deliberately have integrated our economies. We had a trade deal with Canada, I think it was 86, a free trade deal with Canada. And then, of course, NAFTA brought Mexico in and Trump had his own trade deal. The economies are integrated. Now you're throwing in this huge roadblock. Imagine that we had tolls at the border of Illinois. Everything that came in from Indiana or Wisconsin, they had to stop at the border and pay some big toll. Well, that would be incredibly disruptive. And that's kind of what Trump is doing with Canada. So it's utterly pointless. And it definitely increases cost and reduces economic efficiency. I mean, it'd be a technical term. It just makes things more difficult. It's paperwork.
Joanne, in your latest Surveys of Consumers report from the University of Michigan, you found that consumer sentiment improved for the second straight month. What other details could you tell us about that report?
Overall, one should note that even though things have improved in sentiment over the last couple of months, it's still historically speaking quite low. Essentially, consumer sentiment had really plummeted between January and April and May of this year. Again, a response to tariff developments. And in April and May, consumers have been really bracing for a worst case scenario, something truly catastrophic. Since then, it appears to consumers that their worst case scenario has not actually come to fruition. So they are easing up a little bit on their worries, but at the same time, they're not optimistic about the future. We still have 58% of consumers spontaneously offering unsolicited comments about tariffs, and we're seeing that across the political spectrum. So even among consumers who might actually agree with White House policy and might actually believe that tariffs might be good for the economy in the long run, consumers are broadly in agreement that in the short run, there's likely to be some pain. And they are expecting a slowdown in the economy.
Is consumer sentiment the same as consumer confidence? We're asking for some of the lay people who may be hearing this conversation and may not understand.
Conceptually, though, you might consider both of them to be essentially describing the same thing. There are a few different measures of consumer sentiment, consumer confidence out there, and the University of Michigan's measure has been published since 1946. So we have a really long history of data collection on this. And essentially speaking, the reason why consumer sentiment matters is that abundance of research over the decades has shown that it's a leading indicator for the economy. You know, given that consumer spending is about 70% of GDP, consumers are really making these decisions that are critical for the economy based on where they expect the economy to be going, and that's captured in our sentiment measure.
We got a text from a member of our texting group. I'm a semi-retired business owner in Carbondale, and since January, my business is down 30%. In my opinion, that's the truth of so-called trickle-down economics. These cost increases do not improve our economy. They improve the bottom line of shareholders. Dean, we've got about a minute left. What do you think about that? How would you respond to that?
Oh, so far it's improved shareholders. We'll see how that holds up. But it's not, this is a horrible environment for any business to try and operate in because not only the tariffs create disruptions, we don't know what the tariffs will be. And Trump seems to take pleasure in, well, it's going to be whatever I feel like tomorrow. But if you're a business owner trying to make plans, do you expand capacity? Do you build a new factory? Do you start a new product line? very hard to do when you have no idea what these tariffs are going to be a year from now or maybe even 2 months from now.
And Joanne, reflecting on some of your research in about 30 seconds, do you feel like people are kind of hesitant to open up a business right now?
At this time, consumers perceive a lot of risks around the economy, not just with inflation and business conditions, but also with labor markets and their own personal incomes. And given all of these risks that they perceive in the years ahead, it's hard to see why consumers might be, or businesses might be willing to take financial risk, you know, in terms of starting a new business or making a large financial investment. These aren't really the conditions that would facilitate consumers kind of take going out on a limb right now.
Okay, we're talking about the economy and how everyone's feeling about it. You're listening to The 21st Show, and we'll continue our conversation right after this break.
Support for The 21st Show comes from listeners like you and the Des Moines Arts Center, located in Iowa's capital city, featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
Welcome back to The 21st Show. I'm Reginald Hardwick from Illinois Public Media, sitting in for Brian Mackey, and we're talking about the economy and how we're all feeling about it. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Joanne Hsu, who is the Director of the Surveys of Consumers and Research Associate Professor at the University of Michigan, and Dean Baker, Senior Economist and Co-Founder of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And you can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. Earlier this morning, we saw the Dow tumble nearly 500 points. So there's weak jobs data and also the new tariffs that the president announced yesterday with about 60 U.S. trading partners. Right now, the Dow, as of 11:24 a.m. on Friday, is down 435, and the NASDAQ is down 356. Joanne, I'm going to turn back to you. And are you hearing from, let's talk about the bigger impacts of the financial uncertainty. Have you heard from newly graduated students? You know, are they anxious or concerned about their job prospects?
Historically speaking, younger consumers tend to have more favorable levels of sentiment than older consumers. But what's really interesting right now is that there's a broad amount of agreement, even across the generations, that about the economy. Consumers broadly feel like the outlook for the economy has deteriorated relative to last year. So I think separate from young people who might be on the job market for the very first time, consumers are broadly going to be accounting for their income expectations when they think about how much are we going to spend? Do I want to lock up 3 years of car payments? And right now, consumers are expecting pretty anemic income growth, and they're expecting unemployment to go up. And this is concerning because this wasn't the case, you know, a couple of years ago in 2022, when we also had really low levels of sentiment. At that time, consumers felt like their incomes were really reliable, labor markets were really strong. So even though they felt terrible about the economy back then, they were still willing to spend through it. And that just doesn't seem to be the case right now.
800-222-9455 is our number. And we have Paul from Urbana has a question for Dean.
Yeah. As you critique the regular business press on many, many fronts, I'm wondering what you think is the most mischaracterized part of this discussion and what's absent. I think the non-tariff barriers stuff that they've been throwing up, like the VAT tax in Europe, is an example of the latter. You very rarely hear that that's supposedly a grievance. Could you take that and run with it? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I have a blog, Beat the Press, which years past I'd focus more explicitly on reporting, and I take it more generally now, but I do often talk about reporting. But yeah, the VAT, I mean, probably half of what I'm saying, what's being missed is the utter craziness of, you know, Trump's crusade here. And again, I mean, you could say this is being biased, but these are You know, there are facts about the world, and the value-added tax, which Trump has repeatedly cited as a unfair trade practice, it's a sales tax. I literally had never heard of anyone suggesting that a value-added tax was an unfair trading practice. It's a sales tax, just like sales taxes that Illinois has, most states in the country have. There's not a qualitative difference. And of course, if goods are exported, they don't pay the sales tax. It's for consumption. So that's, I mean, this goes to the heart of Trump's trade war that he's fighting like it really is a Don Quixote thing. He's going after windmills and claiming victory. And it really is close to crazy. And I understand they don't want to be in the face of a president, especially someone who is so belligerent to media outlets. But that is the reality. And I don't know if reporters are just shying away from being critical, or they don't want to keep saying bad things. But that's the biggest problem I see, that this is kind of a pointless trade war that you can only lose because there is no point to it.
For people who may not follow financial news quite as closely as you do, what is the VAT tax?
Oh, I'm sorry. VAT tax is a value-added tax. So it is very much like a sales tax. I don't want to go into the full complexity, but it's essentially, if I'm buying a good, and different countries have different levels, but let's say that in France it's 15%, and frankly, I have no idea exactly what it is in France. But that means if I'm buying a car for 20,000 euros, I'm going to pay a tax of 15%, 3,000 euros on that car. If that car is exported, and this is where Trump saying, oh, this is so unfair, they don't pay the value-added tax. But again, it's a sales tax. If we buy something in Illinois, we pay Illinois sales tax on it. If the company in Illinois sells it to Indiana or wherever it might be, they don't pay the Illinois sales tax. I never heard of that being an unfair trade practice.
I want to read a text from John in Springfield. Future tax cut extensions for rich people worry me about both the economic and environmental futures for the middle class, myself and my children and grandchildren. I think he's referring to the Big Beautiful Bill that Trump called it, that the Congress passed just a couple of weeks ago. Joanne, what would you like to respond to that? And what are you hearing from folks?
So I've been actually quite curious about how consumers are feeling about the potential increase in the federal debt and whether or not they're paying close attention to developments in Congress. And what's been interesting is that this year it's been pretty clear that tariffs have been the number one policy that's been on people's minds. Like I said, about 58% of consumers in the most recent reading spontaneously mentioning tariffs. We have fewer people talking about the recent tax and spending bill. Only about 5%, and it's been pretty mixed between people who talk about it favorably and people who talk about it unfavorably. And that's similar to what we're seeing in terms of other forms of fiscal policy, like things related to DOGE or federal government restructuring or immigration. Some people think it's good for the economy, some people think it's bad for the economy, and essentially that kind of cancels each other out when it comes to overall consumer views of the economy. At this time, there are a handful of folks that we interview who are mentioning it, but it doesn't seem to be very salient to people yet.
We're talking about the economy and how people are feeling about it, and you can join us at 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. We're speaking with Joanne Hsu, the Director of the Surveys of Consumers and a Research Associate Professor at the University of Michigan, and Dean Baker, Senior Economist and Co-Founder of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. A few more texts from our listeners. Amy in Wakanda says, we're spending as little money as possible and saving as much as we can. Lloyd in Danville tells us that as a recent retiree, he's paying off all his debt. Dean, are you noticing people trying to save more? And if they can?
Well, again, obviously a lot of people are very concerned about things, and that means you put off big ticket purchases. Now, I will say one thing that goes the other way, and I presume we're pretty much at the end of this. A lot of people were making big ticket purchases in advance of the tariffs. So you see this very clearly in the data. So, of course, President Trump wins the election in November. You see in the November and December data a big uptick in purchases of consumer durables, cars, and other, you know, big ticket items. So that kind of goes the other way, but not out of caution. This was, oh my God, I'm going to have to pay 10, 15, 20% more for that 6 months down the road because of tariffs. But I think we are seeing a lot of people tightening the belt, if you like. One of the things I like to look to are spending in restaurants. And that's been pretty much flat over the last 6 months. I'm picking on restaurants here because, to my view, that's kind of the ultimate discretionary spending. You know, if you feel good about things, you go out and go to a restaurant and, you know, have a dinner out. If you want to tighten your belt, that's the simplest way to do it. And that certainly indicates to me that a lot of people are feeling stressed. And just by comparison, it was growing about a 3.5% rate in 2024. So again, I know a lot of people said they had negative views about the economy last year or the year before. But when you look at what they actually did, they were spending at least on things like restaurants, including fast food restaurants, by the way, too, because I have people say, well, that's the rich people. They're spending this. You go, okay, well, Elon Musk is not buying more Big Macs. That's not what's driving sales in fast food restaurants.
And what Dean is mentioning is actually very consistent with what consumers are telling us on the survey. We have a growing share of consumers who are telling us that they are cutting back on things with particularly large price increases, and they specifically mention things like going out to eat and luxury items. And again, like the big difference between the current moment and a couple of years ago when consumers also had really low sentiment was back then they were supported by strong and reliable incomes, and right now consumers just don't feel that strength anymore.
There are many studies exploring the relationship between economic uncertainty and mental health. And the American Psychiatric Association puts it, economic stress increases vulnerability to psychiatric conditions due to the chronic stress it imposes on individuals and families. Joanne, I'll start with you and we can go to Dean after that. What have you noticed in your years following the economy and also more recently this year?
Well, what we're seeing is that uncertainty is something that definitely weighs on consumers and makes it more difficult for them to plan for the future. Of the 58% of consumers that I mentioned who are spontaneously bringing up unsolicited comments on tariffs, a very large share of them are specifically pointing to uncertainty. So it's not just about the idea that tariff rates are much higher than we've seen historically. It's also just the uncertainty itself. And uncertainty just, again, makes it harder for consumers to plan. Makes it harder for them to be confident about making big ticket purchases when they don't really know what's going to go on in the future. And it's certainly weighing on their future financial planning.
Dean, how do you?
Yeah, I very much agree along those lines. I mean, you know, again, not to try and play psychologist here, but we know people value certainty in their life in a variety of different ways. I mean, that's part of the reason people really value home ownership, because you know you don't have a landlord who's just going to double your rent. They're turning it into a condo or whatever. It's security. It's one reason why Social Security is hugely popular, again, across the political spectrum. You ask people about Social Security, everyone says it's a great program. And there's a little difference between Republicans and Democrats. Again, it'll change a little poll to poll, but over 80% Republicans, Democrats, independents, they all say Social Security is a great program. And that's because, you know, as long as you live, you're going to get your check for $2,000 or $3,000, whatever it is. That's a really, really big deal. And of course, employment certainty. It matters hugely to people if they think they can get a job or keep their job. Again, one of the things I always look to when we get the jobs report that I certainly looked at today, what percent of unemployment is due to people who voluntarily quit their job? And my reason for looking at that is if you voluntarily quit your job and end up being unemployed, that means you were confident enough in your labor market prospects that you were willing to tell your boss, I'm leaving, with the idea that, okay, you don't have a job lined up, but you'll get one in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, but you will be unemployed for a period. You might be unemployed for a period of time. Well, that number's really fallen a lot. It's actually very low given the unemployment rate, which suggests to me a lot of people feel very uncertain about the state of the labor market. So again, that has to be a stressor. Again, I'm not gonna try and be a psychologist and say, well, is that gonna cause depression and cause people to, you know, break down? I don't know, but it has to be very stressful to be uncertain about your job prospects or your income.
And then add on to that debt, Joanne or Dean, I don't know if you have any, kind of perspective on, you know, it's not an uncertain labor, you know, situation, but, you know, if you have debt, and I know like today the student loan interests are coming back, or interest rates are coming back. How's that in mental health? You know, do you hear people talk about that?
Well, I'll just mention something quickly and I'll shut up. But Biden, to my view, had a great income-driven repayment plan that got, unfortunately, very little attention, and I thought it was a really big deal. Where if you get out of school, and you know, of course, the intention is you go to college, you'll get a good-paying job, you'll be able to pay back your loan. But we know that often ends up not being the case. So his income-driven repayment plan had a situation where if you earn less, and these are rough numbers, you paid earn less than $33,000 a year, you literally paid zero on your loan for that period. And then you paid 5% of your income over $33,000. So if you end up getting a high-paying job, you're earning $100,000 a year, whatever, you're going to be paying back your loan. But if you end up, this classic story, you're working as a barista in Starbucks, well, you're not making very much money. Well, you don't have to pay. And I just thought that was great. That has to relieve stress for a lot of people who come out of college with big debt. And of course, they want to get a job where they could pay it back, but there's no guarantee in life that you do. And unfortunately, that was first stymied by the courts, and now Trump's reversed that. So that I thought was a great thing. And, you know, unfortunately, it's gone.
Joanne, does your survey, are there concerns about, you know, mounting debt, or are people just using their credit cards or whatever?
Overall, debt service payments are certainly something that will weigh on consumers. So if they're spending a large part of their monthly income on debt payments, that's less money that can be used for spending, investing, and saving, and so forth. I think what's really critical for consumers going forward is not just about how much debt that they're holding, but how much access they have to affordable debt in case they suffer some sort of shock, in case they lose their job, or those rent payments go up. Do they have a way to kind of float themselves in the event of something bad happening? And the more debt that you have now means the more expensive or the less access to credit that you have in the future. And that is certainly something that will affect consumers' ability to take risks, to spend heavily if they don't have access to that.
We know a lot of this is out of our control, but Joanne, are there any recommendations you would give to people trying to navigate this moment?
I think that what I would say to consumers is that there's a ton of uncertainty right now, and it's not just any individual consumer. We are all feeling it. Policymakers are feeling it. Businesses are feeling it. And, you know, hopefully some of that uncertainty resolves itself. But in the meantime, I think history has shown that when consumers don't feel confident, what they tend to do is to pull back. And that can be something that's going to be that will help an individual consumer, but that's not necessarily something, unfortunately, that helps the overall economy.
And Dean, quickly, any advice from you?
Yeah, same story, you know, just kind of obvious things. You don't want to take on big debt now if you could avoid it. So if you were thinking of buying a new car, which most people do on a loan, you might want to put that off to see how things shake out over the next 3 or 6 months. And if your job's secure, your income's secure, then maybe go ahead and do it. But you really don't want to take on big debt just now.
We've been speaking with Dean Baker, senior economist and co-founder of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and as well as Joanne Hsu, who's the director of the Surveys of Consumers and a research associate professor at the University of Michigan. Thank you both for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
And coming up next, you know, we've had tornadoes, really cold weather here, dust storms. What's going on with our weather and climate? Well, there's a new podcast about it, and we'll tell you how you could submit questions to Illinois' top scientists. That's coming up next on The 21st Show. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Stay with us.